Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Christopher Jones Cruz, and Dorothy Gundy. Later, John Russell will bring us this week's education report. But first, Americans are still frustrated with the economy, although new economic information suggests people are working and pay is higher. Many people say the economic recovery has left them behind. They say they plan to voice their frustrations when they vote in the presidential election in November. Denise Alber, from Stafford County in the state of Virginia, is one of those people. She has 2 college degrees. She has decided not to work and to help her 98-year-old mother. Together, they receive a fixed income of nearly $25,000 a year. That total is just above the poverty rate for a family of 2. She says the price for food, gasoline, and electricity have increased, but her family's income has not gone up.
It's been very, very difficult to maintain the same standard of living. We have not maintained it.
Alber believes that the middle class is not being treated fairly. New government data show that family incomes rose over 5% in 2015. That is the largest increase since 2007. That increase is another indication that the U.S. recovery continues. However, economists say incomes remain nearly 2% below levels in 2007, before the start of the Great Recession. Maya McGinnis is the president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. She understands why many Americans feel like the recovery has left them behind. She said Americans once took a job and the salary grew until retirement.
I don't think it feels like that anymore.
Economists say it is that sense of betrayal that is driving much of the anger during this election season. Some dissatisfaction is caused by a feeling that middle-class incomes have remained the same while wealthy families have prospered. Elise Gould is senior economist at the Economic Policy Institute in Washington, D.C. She says the difference between the highest and lowest earners has increased since the recession.
The top 5% is still the only group that has completely returned back to their 2000 levels, so they've made up lost ground, so there's inequality across the income distribution.
Some economists blame the lack of an economic recovery for all on political disagreements in Washington. That is one of the reasons Denise Alber says the next election is so important. But she is not hopeful that the leading candidates will be able to provide results.
In terms of the economy or politics, I'm very despondent in that regard. I don't think either candidate will help the middle class.
Many Americans will be using paperless voting machines when they vote in the U.S. elections. About one-fourth of registered voters are expected to use electronic machines that do not produce a paper backup, according to the Reuters News Service. Some of the touchscreen equipment is over 15 years old. Security experts say the paperless machines can have issues that result in votes being wrongly recorded. The lack of a paper record makes it impossible to make sure the systems are working correctly, they said. The Reuters story was based on information from three groups: U.S. Census Bureau, the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, and the Verified Voting Foundation Watchdog Group. Americans will choose a new president, a new Congress, and vote on local issues in the November 8th election. About 44 million registered voters, about 25% of the total, live in areas using paperless systems, Reuters said. These include the battleground states of Pennsylvania and Virginia. Alex Halderman teaches computer science at the University of Michigan. He has helped find security problems with touchscreen voting systems. Clearly, we still have a long way to go to ensure that all Americans have access to a form of voting technology they can trust, Halderman said. Most of these machines are nearing the end of their life expectancy, he said. This has led to more breakdowns. Repair parts are also not easy to find. But Matthew Masterson of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission disagrees. He told Reuters that election officials have taken the necessary steps to secure these systems and ensure the integrity of the process. Some election officials have said a cyber attack involving voting machines is not likely because they are not connected to the Internet. But experts point out that voting data can also be destroyed through memory cards with no Internet needed. They say the best way to prevent that kind of hacking is to move to a system with a paper backup. Last week, U.S. defense officials repeated their concerns that cyber attackers might try to disrupt U.S. elections in November. During a Senate hearing last Tuesday, the nation's top cybersecurity official said the issue continues to be of great focus. The official was Admiral Michael Rogers. He serves as both National Security Agency Director and Chief of the Defense Department's Cyber Command. Rogers told the Senate Armed Services Committee he could not go into detail about the cyber activity. However, he added, "I think there are scenarios where you could see capability applied." Committee Chairman Senator John McCain of Arizona first raised the question about a possible disruption of the upcoming presidential and local elections. McCain identified Russia as one country where cyber attackers are operating.
Russia is using cyber to undermine American national interest, and now it appears our democracy could be the next target.
U.S. defense, intelligence, and law enforcement officials have long worried about the Russian government's possible cyber activities. The officials believe hackers in Russia or elsewhere could enter the computer systems of U.S. states during the voting process. Defense Undersecretary for Intelligence Marcel Letra told the Senate panel the government is currently taking these possibilities quite seriously. I'm Brian Lynn.
Indonesia's Loser ecosystem is one of the few places where tigers, orangutans, elephants, and rhinoceros all live in the wild. But there has been talk of possible development of the area for geothermal energy, heat that comes from the earth. Wildlife activists are worried about the plan. Rudy Putra is an advisor at the Loser Conservation Forum. He asked, why do they want to build it inside Aceh's best remaining forest? He believes that if the plan is approved, the area will lose many, many animals. The Loser ecosystem is in Aceh, Indonesia's westernmost province. Last month, the provincial governor asked the central government to change zoning laws for 8,000 hectares of the ecosystem to permit geothermal exploration. Under the plan, a Turkish company would explore part of the 800,000-hectare Gunung Loser National Park. The United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, has declared the park a World Heritage Site. The rezoning request was structured to help Indonesian President Joko Widodo. He has promised to add 35,000 megawatts of electricity to Indonesia's energy grid by 2020. The plan is designed to increase renewable energy production. But environmentalists worry that such a development would start a series of events leading to Loser's collapse. Once the destruction is started, they say, officials would be powerless to stop it. Farwiza Farhan leads a group called Forest, Nature, and Environment of Aceh. She says, anywhere you put roads, destruction follows. She says timber companies and small farmers used the roads to gain entry to forests, leading to environmental destruction. Right now, it is geothermal, but what's next? Even now, they can't protect Loser, she said. Federal laws for protecting wildlife are in place. But in recent years, illegal development and logging has been a problem. Some observers say the ecosystem is shrinking by about 5,500 hectares a year. In Sumatra, logging and land development for farming has destroyed almost one-fourth of the forests since 2000. Recently, the Indonesian Environment Ministry ruled on the Aceh provincial government's plan. The environmental group Monga Bay says the ministry denied the request. The group said it learned about the decision last week during a meeting of the International Union for Conservation and Natural Resources in Hawaii. The minister's director for protected areas told Monga Bay that the minister received the proposal. But the result was disagreement with the rezoning, so that's that. The plan stops there, he said. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
The month of September has been one of the busiest months for the arrival of refugees in the United States. Almost 79,000 refugees from 78 countries have come to the U.S. since October of last year. That is the largest number of refugees coming to America in 17 years. According to official data. The effort to bring more Syrians fleeing violence in their country has made September the busiest month for arrivals in 10 years. The U.S. refugee program is operated by several federal agencies. These agencies still expect that 85,000 refugees will arrive by the end of September. Michelle Tuno is a staff member with the U.S. Refugee Program at the International Organization for Migration's Washington office. He said his agency had bought enough airplane tickets for the targeted number of refugees to reach the U.S. by the end of the month. He said September is usually a busy time for the arrival of refugees. The refugee program tries to get close to the target number without exceeding it. The actual number of refugees often falls a little short of the target. That happened last year. President Barack Obama and the State Department decided 70,000 refugees would be allowed into the U.S., and the country admitted 69,933. European countries struggled to process hundreds of thousands of refugees and asylum seekers in 2015. President Obama announced an increase in the number of refugees the U.S. would accept for resettlement this year. The number rose to 85,000 from 70,000. The decision included the goal of admitting 10,000 Syrian refugees. The summer months saw a sharp increase in arrivals. The numbers increased because many Syrian families quickly came from Jordan. July and August were so crazy, we definitely felt the push, said Arlande Wantimo, regional director for Lutheran Social Services of the National Capital Area. The social services group finds immediate housing for families of refugees. Someone from the service provides transportation, helps enroll children in school, and provides support in a new country. Lutheran Social Services and other groups say they can meet the demand of even more refugees. The groups say they could assist 200,000 more refugees. The government set a goal of 100,000 for the coming fiscal year. The fiscal or financial year begins October 1st. Media reports this week have suggested that Obama will raise that target to 110,000 refugees. We're excited to hear more refugees are going to be coming, said Wantimo. That's a great need. The UN Refugee Agency registered 16.1 million refugees in 2015. Only about 107,000 of those individuals were relocated to countries that volunteer to take displaced persons. These countries include the U.S., Canada, and Australia. Bill Canny heads Migration and Refugee Services for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. He said the current effort is not good enough. Those figures are incredibly low, Canny said. We can all do better, including the United States. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
This is What's Trending Today. Twitter has officially changed its 140-character limit. But that does not exactly mean you can start writing a 1,000-character Twitter message. The change only means that links and pictures will not be counted toward the limit. A report in May suggested that the social media company was considering making the changes. Later, Twitter confirmed the news, and Monday, the company announced the changes were taking effect. Twitter recently celebrated its 10-year anniversary. It has been trying to grow its number of users and find ways to make money. The company reportedly lost more than 2 million users in the last part of 2015. Jack Dorsey founded Twitter and then left. He came back to the company last year to try to improve its business. Dorsey said at the time that he was not going to be shy about building more utility and power into Twitter for people. Like Facebook, Twitter has been urging followers to use media such as photos and videos. It recently added a polling feature. The company also made changes to its timeline, permitting users to see so-called best tweets first. The company has also announced that it reached a $10 million deal with the National Football League. Twitter will stream 10 Thursday night games during the American football season. And that's what's trending today.
English learners can improve their pronunciation by working with pitch humming. This advice comes from Tamara Jones. She works for the English Language Center at Howard Community College in the American state of Maryland. English learners, Jones notes, often think that they can be easily understood if all they do is pronounce individual sounds clearly. However, saying or speaking individual sounds, such as r or v, is only one element of pronunciation. Other parts of pronunciation include rhythm, intonation, and word emphasis. Together, they form what we call the music of English. English learners can become more familiar with the music of English by using pitch humming, mirroring the up and down movement of a speaker's voice. English is a language that does not always use grammar to show meaning. In English, speakers use pitch, high or low sounds, to give sentences different meanings. Grammatically, two sentences can be identical, but the meaning is completely different. Consider this example.
How was breakfast?
The coffee was good.
In the example, the second person makes a statement about the coffee that was served with breakfast. The meaning is direct and clear. Now, listen to a second example. This time, Tamara Jones shows how pitch can change meaning.
How was breakfast?
The coffee was good.
The second example carries a much different meaning than the first example, yet both examples are grammatically identical. Tamara Jones explains.
Because my pitch change is coming on the word coffee, I'm meaning that probably the rest of the breakfast was not very good. But I don't say that using grammar or word order. Instead, I am communicating my meaning through pitch change.
Pitch humming means listening to an English speaker and then repeating the up and down patterns that you hear them make. You do not even need to understand all of the words they are saying. Just copy the pitch by humming along with the speaker. By using pitch humming, Jones says, English learners can begin to recognize the up and down movement of the voice and the words that a speaker emphasizes. Jones gives an example of what this exercise sounds like. In another education tip story, we gave you an example of the pitch of a voice from Martha Kolln's book, Rhetorical Grammar. Here is the sentence. One of the most important aspects of your expertise with sentences is your sense of rhythm. In the sentence, you can hear that some syllables are emphasized while others are not. Overall, the pitch goes down after important syllables, notably at the end of the sentence. If you were to hum the pitch movement of the sentence, it might sound like this. Jones suggests that English learners start the pitch humming exercise by listening to a brief radio or television broadcast. Then, the learners should hum along with the speaker, listening for the up and down movement of the voice and emphasized words. In other words, the parts of pronunciation that are not about individual sounds. Jones adds that English learners do not always need to listen to native English speakers. The learners can also get help by listening to a capable English speaker who has learned English as a second language. Ideally, she says, the speaker will share the learner's native language. So, for example, an English learner who speaks French as a native language would look for a French speaker who speaks English well. This exercise provides the learner with an example of an attainable model. Give pitch humming a try and let us know how it works for you. I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.